Everyone, I'm going to be speaking to you this morning with regard to my dissertation, which looked at risk perception related to communicable disease among international college students. And the communicable diseases that I'll be speaking about tend more toward influenza and sudden acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS. So I just wanted to clarify that. I have nothing to disclose. And a little background. International college students are a mobile population who travel to a variety of destinations worldwide, and very little information is known with regard to their knowledge, understanding, attitudes, risk perception, or behaviors as they travel. This was a parallel, descriptive, mixed-method study looking to examine specifically the international college students' knowledge, understanding, risk perception, attitude, and behaviors pertaining to universal prevention strategies related to non-sexually transmitted communicable diseases. The aims of this study were first to describe the perceptions of risk in these students related to communicable disease, identify health behaviors that they described in response to their concerns about communicable disease behaviors, and identify differences in health behaviors among the students based on the region of the world from which they originated. The setting was 7 universities, 6 in Southern California, 1 in Arizona. 4 were small Christian-affiliated universities. 3 were secular large urban universities. The instrument used for this study was the Risk Perception of Infectious Disease Questionnaire. This questionnaire was developed at the beginning of the sudden acute respiratory syndrome epidemic and has been used in several studies in the Netherlands, the United Kingdom, and China to examine the risk perception of individuals specific to sudden acute respiratory syndrome and influenza. And these are some of the publications regarding those studies. My theoretical framework was a modification of Bronfenbrenner's social ecological model, incorporating acculturation and inculturation, as well as adjusting in the exosystem, moving the family to the exosystem, where traditionally this is a community, but I expanded it to include community and peers in the native country of origin, and then in the mesosystem, put in the roommates, the peers, and the housemates on the campus where the student was living in the United States. My hypothesis is they had a more direct influence on the student and their perception of risk. My quantitative sample was an internet survey sent out to over 3,000 international students. I had a very small return rate of little less than 7%. 157 students responded to this survey. As you can see, they were from 5 different regions, looking at the Pacific Rim in blue at 62%, followed by Africa, India, the Middle East, and South America. Participants were slightly higher percentage at 55% male. Age range was from 18 to 50. This included both graduate and undergraduate students, and they were evenly divided between healthcare majors and non-healthcare majors. In looking at my findings for the quantitative survey, with the first variable looking at the perception of risk, this was measured by 4 different Likert scales. They were 10-point scales, first being disease severity that looked at the individual's perception of severity of disease. And as you can see in this table over here, HIV was the highest perceived in severity with a mean score of 6.4. Influenza, SARS, and tuberculosis came in identical at 5.9, and with the common cold, as expected, very low in perceived severity at 2.9. Looking at the personal risk, which was the individual defined as the individual's risk of contracting a disease, less than 50% felt that they were at risk for contracting the flu. Most felt that they were at highest risk for contracting tuberculosis or the common cold. And then in looking at their comparative risk, which was their perception of risk related to others of their same age, interestingly enough, the common cold backed down to about 45% along with influenza. And we found that SARS and tuberculosis were perceived at higher risk for these individuals. Now, many of these individuals do come from countries where tuberculosis is endemic, so that did alter their perception a degree. In looking at the last chart in the lower right-hand corner, they felt that their risk of exposure was in the environments of the workplace or the school, as well as in public transportation, which is not unexpected. In looking at the variable of knowledge related specifically to SARS and influenza, a high level of knowledge in the top table here was seen in that they understood that influenza could cause death. But what was really interesting is when I got to the qualitative portion of my study, this was in direct opposition to some of the personal perspectives with regard to influenza. They also had a high knowledge that SARS was communicable, but when it came down to knowing the symptoms, they had a very low knowledge level. Yet their overall perception of their knowledge in this figure here was that they felt for both H1N1 and for SARS that they had a good set of knowledge, indicating that they had some to quite a bit of knowledge with regard to both diseases. We also, I also looked at what information did the students feel was important to them with regard to disease prevention during an outbreak, and they felt 49% felt that prevention of the infection was important. 29% felt that disease transmission, knowing how the disease was transmitted, was important, but only 10% felt it was important to know the symptoms of the disease. And yet that's a hallmark of knowing when you're at risk for, in many cases. With regard to the variable of health behaviors, not surprisingly, when I looked at the sources used to obtain information on new or emerging diseases, the internet was 59% of the participants' first choice, not unexpected in a college population, followed by family and friends. What is really interesting for those of us that are in disease prevention is that television, government sources, and physicians were so low as a source of information. While they were highly regarded in and had a great deal of confidence, they were not where the individuals went to obtain their information. And this will also be highlighted in the qualitative portion of the study. I also looked at what behaviors they would modify during an outbreak, and on the instrument there were two different scenarios. The first was if there was an outbreak in the United States where 1.5 million individuals were infected and 15,000 deaths had occurred, we saw that there was a 40% modification in going out for entertainment, a 27% modification in going out and utilizing public transportation. If, however, the severity of the outbreak was increased, where you had 5.9 million individuals infected, which is similar to a very large pandemic, and 59,000 deaths, that there was a reduction in those that would avoid public transportation as well as going out for entertainment. But this was made up for in the self-isolation, which increased from 5% to 16%, as well as increases in keeping children home and not going out shopping. And in some of these cases, going out shopping would be for things like groceries, and so there would be a limitation in that. In looking at the qualitative portion of this study, this was the interpretive phenomenological analysis pathway that I developed and utilized, and the contextual categories of behavioral, cognitive, cultural, and psychological, that the superordinate themes and polarizations were grouped into. And I'll just show you briefly some of those results. In the behavioral category, where patterns of behavior related to communicable disease were highlighted. In the first, In the first theme that emerged from this analysis, the effect of societal messages on individual prevention behaviors. What was interesting is a polarization that emerged out of that was with increased media coverage by governments, there was a decrease in individual attention to the message. So the more they heard the message, the less they paid attention to it. Also, the use of social media, which was highlighted in the quantitative portion in the second bullet. The youth relied on internet. Older students and parents relied on more traditional methods. What was interesting, though, is for the students relying on the internet, most of their communications were around social events or coursework, very little with regard to outside the outside world. In fact, there were several outbreaks while I was doing the interviews. Norovirus, there was in the southeast isolation of a plane for potential virus coming from Africa, and the students had no knowledge of that, yet it was all over the internet, it was on the newspaper, but they were not the sites that they were looking at. And so even though they utilize the internet, they are not gathering information with regard to the outside world via those mediums. Also, a third bullet down, social media. There was an increased reliance on it, but a lack of awareness of the unreliability of the information received on it. And this is not a surprise, but yet many of them did feel it was gospel. If I got it via social media, via friends, then it was something that I needed to take to heart. In the cognitive category, looking at thoughts related to communicable diseases, the top bullet there, the relationship of proximity to the perception of risk, this I felt was an interesting finding in that, and it correlated well with the quantitative, with the lack of interest in symptoms, that if there was no symptomology in friends, family, or neighbors, even though there was disease in the community, that the perception was their risk was minimal. And so they very tightly associated their risk with visible symptoms of disease. In the second bullet down, the lack of recognition of risk, this is where I had direct opposition from the knowledge in the quantitative, in that they had high knowledge that influenza could cause death, yet for many of them on a personal level, during the interview, they would relate back to diseases endemic in their native country and then associate that risk, so that influenza actually fell very low with regard to potential risk of death. And other diseases like dengue fever were much higher, even though they were not in their country of origin at the time we were posing this question. The other is looking at the next category, which was cultural patterns related to communicable diseases. And in the top bullet there, the consequences of societal perspectives. This was seen primarily in the Pacific Rim region, where the priority of family obligations resulted in a decrease in personal prevention behaviors. If there was a family obligation, even during an outbreak, they would travel. They would not take any unusual precautions. Most would just buy the ticket, get on the plane, and go. And so that was very interesting, especially when you consider that many of our recent epidemics and pandemics originated in the Pacific Rim. So you would almost wonder why there wasn't a heightened awareness for prevention. The third bullet down, the risk perception and disease behaviors, there was an increased belief that risk or rest, food, exercise, and hydration prevented disease, that resulted in a lack of awareness that communicable diseases can affect healthy populations, and in fact, the majority do. And this was, again, predominant in those from the Pacific Rim, really thinking that if I've done everything right, then I am immune to disease, which we don't really address in our health prevention messaging. In looking at the psychological category, where the emotional response to communicable disease, the psychological consequences of the unknown or not knowing, the increased need for health information in that first bullet, but yet felt unable to trust the information. Numerous individuals that I interviewed, and there were nine, all representing different regions of the country, and all had completed the initial questionnaire, felt that the information they received from government sources, from news media, even from friends and family, had conflicting information, and they didn't know who to trust. So trust became a very big issue. Also looking at visual media, there was a distrust because there was felt there was significant bias in the visual media. And in many of the cultures, the visual media did not really provide direct, reliable information about what was happening. They felt much of it was sensationalized. And so that became a key theme. So this study has many limitations in that it was a small study with only 101 that totally completed the questionnaire and only nine that were interviewed. It was done in a small region of the nation, Southern California, and in a limited number of universities, although I will say that I did contact over 22 universities nationwide. 15 chose not to participate, only the rest did not send a response, so these were the seven that chose to participate. Interestingly enough, I did have one that indicated that this study would not have any significance for their student population. So I think I have some work out there to do. I do feel, however, it has opened the door to information that is needed in this population. When we look at statistics from 2012, we had over 764,000 international students in the United States and over almost 274,000 American students traveling abroad to study, and little is known about their health behaviors or their perceptions. And when you can be anywhere in the world in under 24 hours, and the incubation period for most communicable diseases is much longer than that, I think we have some work to do. In conclusion, an understanding is a major line of defense against disease transmission. The understanding of the knowledge of these students and their perceptions and behavior will be very important in disease transmission. My next steps include looking at a larger sample, both overall and from individual regions, examination of U.S. students traveling abroad, as well as looking at social media and internet messaging in the future. I would like to acknowledge my dissertation chair and my dissertation committee and microscopic references. So, thank you.